The best among people are those who benefit mankind. Good morning, one and all. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming our guest speaker, the founder and chairman of the Gift of the Givers Foundation, Dr. Suleiman. Dr. Suleiman matriculated in 1978 and went on to study medicine at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, qualifying as a medical doctor in 1984. He commenced his private practice in Pietermaritzburg in 1986, but closed his flourishing practice in 1994 to focus his attention to the Gift of the Givers Foundation, which he founded in early August 1992. One of the reasons why the Gift of the Givers Foundation came to be was when Dr. Suleiman's spiritual leader from Istanbul, Turkey, called on him to serve all people of all races, of all religions, of all colors, of all classes, of all political affiliations, and of any geographical location. A calling he honored then and continues to honor today. His endeavors in this regard have seen the Gift of the Givers Foundation emerge as one of the most respected humanitarian organizations in the world, and is today the largest disaster response agency of African origin anywhere on the continent. Since 1992, Dr. Suleiman has steered the organization to many notable achievements and world firsts, including delivering more than 3.8 billion rand in aid, coming to the assistance of millions of people in no fewer than 45 countries across the globe, including South Africa, developing the world's first and only containerized mobile hospital of its kind, and has been compared to any of the best hospitals in Europe, innovating the world's first groundnut soya high energy and protein supplement for people suffering from such conditions like HIV, AIDS, TB, malnutrition, cancer, and other debilitating disorders. Heading the first organization in the history of South Africa to have received 60 million rand from government for the design and successful rollout of 204,000 food parcels. Alleviating the ravaging drought in South Africa by drilling 400 boreholes in just 18 months. Rescuing 64-year-old Ina Zizi alive after she had been trapped under rubble for 8 days without food or water, little oxygen, and a fractured hip in the aftermath of the Haiti earthquake of 2010. This was a world first for an African organization involved in earthquake search and rescue outside Africa. One and all, please help me in giving a very warm welcome to Dr. Suleiman.
Thank you very much for that introduction. Thank you everyone being here. Celeste, Emma, Tombi, all the management, gentlemen from America, all the parents, all the alumni, the students, the tricks, everyone. Thank you very much for having me here this morning. Before I go into my background, we need to reflect. Isn't today a beautiful day? You can feel the spirituality. You can feel the blessing. You can feel the goodness. Whenever you start an event remembering the Almighty, there's blessing. When you remember the founding members of something that is good, there is blessing. When you instill in your children the value of education and teach them values of religion, spirituality, morality, and ethics, there is goodness. This is the goodness that our country so desperately needs. Spirituality, morality, values, and ethics has to filter through every aspect of government, corporates, private sector, religion, public sector, everyone. And if we do that, we will rebuild our country in the most incredible way. Religion has been known to divide and split human beings. to tear communities apart. And that's not the purpose. Whoever does that has actually moved away from religion. And it is important and admirable that your college, and this is a monster college, I've never spoken to so many people at one time in any school, congratulations, that this college instills those kind of values in their children. So let's bring a little bit of the blending of religions. The story starts, and there's a lot of spirituality in what I'm going to say. The story starts in 1985. I wanted to qualify. I was in the final year of internship, and I wanted to specialize as a doctor in internal medicine. I couldn't get a post to study further. God had other plans. January 86, I moved to Pietermaritzburg from Durban and started my own practice. The first week I moved to Pietermaritzburg, an Africana guy from Pretoria moved to Maritzburg also to come and teach French in the university, UKZN, in Maritzburg. My neighbor said, I've got this guy came here, he bought meat and he needs a doctor. And I told him, my neighbor is a doctor. We became friends and we spoke. And the spiritual teaching in 1985 to 1986 started as we were going. Every time I treated him, he spoke. He spoke about St. John the Divine in New York, and I've been there. And he talks about a spiritual teacher from Istanbul who had zikr sessions. Zikr in Islamic teaching and Sufism is a celebration of God's names, the one and only kind, compassionate, merciful, all-knowing, all-wise, all-seeing, cherisher, nourisher, sustainer, and so on. And he said people of all religion joined him. Jews, Christians, Hindus, Muslims, those who say they don't believe. Everyone was welcome, and everybody was permitted in St. John the Divine to follow a Muslim Sufi teacher. What could be more unique in terms of unity of your religion? At some point, he tells me, you need to go to meet the teacher after this teacher passed on in 1985 to Istanbul in Turkey. And I said, Miller, it's 1986. I still haven't seen Cape Town. When am I going to see Turkey? He said something very, very profound. And you will understand that. He said, what God wills happens. There's a time and a place. And the time and place was August 1991. I landed up there with my wife, and it was a bit of a shock because this was post-Gulf War. Gulf War polarized us as communities, as religions, as civilizations, as nations. The perception was there that it was the East against the West. Christians and Jews on one side and the Muslims on the other side. Coming from an apartheid past didn't help. Stereotypes were built, people were looked at with suspicion. And with that kind of mindset, I go to Turkey with my wife. I walk into a Muslim holy place, and lo and behold, Americans, Russians, Europeans, Jews, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, Tamils, people of all religion and people of no religion in a Muslim holy place. No friction, no discord, harmony, understanding, acceptance, no imposition. The ideal world, if you can achieve that. It's the leaders of today who can bring that achievement. Now, when you go somewhere, like when I came here, everybody welcome, hello, Dr. Suleiman, how are you? You know, how are you? That kind of stuff. People greet you. When I walked into Turkey, the spiritual connection was made immediately. I saw the spiritual teacher. He saw the shock on my face. And his first question to me was, not how are you? Where do you come from? How's the stay in Istanbul? How's the hotel? How's the weather? No. What do you see? He saw the shock on my face and he said, what do you see? So I said, I'm confused. I'm seeing people of all religion and no religion in a Muslim holy place. And we fought with each other all over the world. How is that possible? And he says, my son, you see right. And we went on to say, mankind is one single nation. The God of all mankind is one. We just call him by different names. The bad behavior of a group of people, individuals, and a small sector is not representative of religion, culture, civilizations, and nations. Any imam, sheikh, Sufi, priest, rabbi, pandit, who promotes violence, extremism, terrorism, discord, and friction is not a man of God. Don't follow him. Anyone who preaches love, kindness, compassion, and mercy is a man of God. Follow him. I fell in love with what I saw. I made the intention with God's grace, mercy, and grace that I will go back. 6 August 1992, I was given the grace of going back. It was a Thursday night. In Islamic tradition, Thursday night is the beginning of Friday because our day starts after sunset. And the spiritual teacher at 10 p.m., again after the zikr ceremony, looks me directly in the eye. He makes eye contact and looks heavenwards at the same time. In fluent Turkish. And I don't speak a word of Turkish. But I understood every single word that he said in Turkish. He said, "My son, I am not asking you spiritual instruction. I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin. Translated, it means gift of the givers. You will serve all people of all races, of all religions, all colors, all classes, all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation. But you will serve them unconditionally. You will expect nothing in return, not even a thank you. In fact, in what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, expect to get a kick up your back. If you don't get a kick up your back, regard it as a bonus. Serve people with love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. And remember, the dignity of man is foremost. So if someone is down in the ground, don't push them down further. Hold them, elevate them. Wipe the tear of a grieving child. Caress the head of an orphan. Say words of good counsel to a widow. These things are free. They don't cost anything. Clothe the naked, feed the hungry, provide water to the thirsty. And in everything you do, be the best at what you do, like you're striving for excellence here. But not for ego, but because you're dealing with human life, human emotion, human dignity, and human suffering." He went on to say, "This is an instruction for the second time. This is an instruction for you for the rest of your life." And then he said something very spiritual once again. "That whatever you do is done through you and not by you." 30 years, I'm a loving witness that everything you guys write and see and TV, that is not me. That is the grace of God Almighty operating through me. Because what is happening is not humanly possible. And this was great instruction and a great feeling, and I've experienced it for 30 years. I told you I don't speak a word of Turkish, but I understood every Turkish word that he said. And I asked him, "How is it that when you speak Turkish, I understand, and other people speak Turkish, I don't understand?" He said, "My son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words become understandable." I asked him, "Now, what is all this? What does it mean? I'm a doctor in private practice. I have 3 surgeries in South Africa and a place called Pietermaritzburg. Is this after hours, weekends, long weekends, public holidays, school holidays? When am I supposed to, and what am I supposed to do?" He gave me one answer, one line. "You will know." For 30 years, I do know. What to do, how to do, what not to do, when to do, what to touch, what not to touch. And it has been happening for 30 years. When I need to speak to somebody, they call me. When I need information, it comes to me. When I have to be in some area, I get a message, "You've got to get involved in there." Everything happens in that way. The first inspiration came out the moment I walked out of the door on the 6th of August, 92. My inspiration, it came, respond to the civil war in Bosnia. And we took in 32 containers of aid in August, 1992. November, 92, 8 containers of aid. And February 1993, we built the world's first containerized mobile hospital. But what did that tell me? That told me that Gift for the Givers, in essence, was going to be a disaster intervention organization. There's lots to talk about, and I mean, I don't want to take your whole day, so I'm just going to cut it short. I'll give you some examples. Up till 2004, we had no personnel going out. It was tents, blankets, food, medicines. 2004, for the first time, we put a primary healthcare team to respond to the tsunami. We went to a place called Hafun on the northeast of Somalia. At the same time, with the Northwood medical team, we responded to the earthquake in the tsunami in Sri Lanka also. We were the first team in the world in Sri Lanka in that July, in that December 2004. In August 2005, again, we took a primary healthcare team to Niger for famine in the country. In October 2005, for the first time, we now added trauma teams and post-op rehab. And I want to give some examples of what happened here. We went to Pakistan. It was a massive earthquake from Rawalpindi right up to the Kashmir border. Thousands of villages went into the ground. We landed in the airport, and the Pakistani general came to me and said, "Do you mind not going to the earthquake?" So I asked him, "Which hospital are you going to give me?" So he said, "You understand?" I said, "I understand." So my team said, "Why did you come if you're not going to the earthquake?" So I said, "He's telling you that everything is destroyed on the top. You can't get things done." So I said, "Have you got helicopters for my teams to go and stabilize those that are alive?" He said, "No, sorry. All helicopters are important missions." So in disasters, you think on your feet. So I looked around. I said, "Ooh, Mr. American, remember? There's the American Air Force." So I go to the guy. I say, "Big black guy." I say, "Brother, where are you from?" He says, "I'm from America." I say, "No, you're black. You're from Africa." He said, "Yes, I'm from Africa." I said, "Me too, I come from Africa." So I said, "I need help. I need a favor." He said, "What you need?" I said, "I need a helicopter." He said, "Take three. Two Black Hawks and another helicopter. 2 minutes. Let the two governments talk. We'll still be waiting for the helicopter. 2 minutes. And we got the three helicopters and the teams went to the mountain. The other team went to the cantonment hospital of Rawalpindi. And as we walked in, we saw teams from the northern countries. "Oh, where are you from?" You see a white guy that speaks Afrikaans. White guy speaks English. They can't understand the accents. Then you got a Hindu guy. And you got a guy like Hashim Amla with a big beard. And the other is getting very confusing. And then there's black people. "Where the hell did you come from?" We said, "Africa." "Oh, what did you come to fetch?" "You guys from Africa always want free things." So I said, "You will eat your words, my friend." And as we walked inside there, we got a stench of gangrene, of children lying on stretchers. No drips, no medical care, no disinfectant, no doctors, no nothing. And I called the military guy and said, "What is this? Is this an organized killing field?" He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Come and see for yourself." The superintendent comes sheepishly to the front and he says, "We're shutting down this hospital. It's supposed to be decommissioned." I told him, "You guys are crazy." So he said, the military man asked me, "What can we do?" So I said, "I'll give you a shopping list. You give me the shopping list and I'll show you what South Africans can do." So he gives me the shopping list. And within 24 hours, a hospital, the cantonment hospital of Rawalpindi, that was shutting down, the South African medical team converted that into a 400-bed emergency hospital. Which did 75 operations a day and saved many lives. In 2006, the Pakistan president, then Parvez Musharraf, gave us the presidential award for our intervention in Pakistan. In December, something unique happened. An Afrikaner, white Christian lady from Takis calls me, a specialist in spinal rehab physiotherapy. She says, "Dr. Suleiman, I'd like to go to Pakistan." So I said, "Karira, when would you like to go?" So she says, "In Christmas." I said, "You can't be feeling well." I said, "When does a Christian person go on a voluntary mission in Christmas to a Muslim country?" She says, "The only time I get off." So she goes, and she makes people walk, and she serves them and brings out the unity of religion. And when she leaves, the patients cry, their families cry, the medical staff cry, and the military cries. They showed such unity and compassion across religion in a Muslim country. We've achieved the beauty of Ubuntu in South Africa, and we took it across. In 2010, I think this is the last story before Celeste tells me something. In 2005, we said, what we don't have, we've evolved. We've had trauma teams, post-op rehab teams, trauma counselors. There's one thing lacking in Gift of the Givers, and that is a search and rescue team. 2010, 12 January, the earthquake hits Haiti, and we're ready with a search and rescue team. Within an hour, we put them on the plane. We spoke to the French consulate. And we ask Derko to talk to them, that time called Foreign Affairs, and we tell them, speak to the French. We need Schengen visa to stay, to go bypass the country. So the French said, come. No paperwork, no pictures, no people, just one person. And gets a Schengen visa in 10 minutes for the whole group. But you know what's important? We got it for free. You know, we Indians, we like free things. So we get the visa, and I say, okay, I'll give Air France the business. And I tell Air France, give me in writing, you'll get my team to Port-au-Prince. I said, you will not get them there. They said, we will get them there. I said, the airport will close. They said, the airport is open. I said, it will close. So they gave it to me in writing, we'll get you there. I said, big mistake. In any case, the teams go. The churches come and greet the teams off at the airport. I think the Methodist Church was part of them. Greets them at the airport. And as they leave, I phone the Catholic Society in Johannesburg. I said, hello, I don't know you. I don't know you. I need the Pope. So the guy's a little stunned. He can't talk for 30 seconds. What does the Muslim guy want the Pope for? So I said, my friend, are you Christian guys not connected all over the world? We Muslims, we're connected all over the world. So he said, what do you want the Pope for? So I said, I want the Catholic organization to meet my teams in Dominican Republic and take them across the border into Port-au-Prince, into Haiti. Gets me back to me 3 hours later. He said, Caritas and Catholic Relief Services will meet your team in Dominican Republic. My teams land in Paris. We got a problem. I said, I know, Port-au-Prince is closed. The airport is closed. Your flights have been changed. In 2 hours, you are going to Dominican Republic. Here's the number. They get to Dominican Republic, CRS, Caritas, South African team, welcome. Food, blankets, medicine, water, accommodation, visas, everything, and they're taken across into Haiti. There's looting, they're shooting in the streets. They've been given refuge with the Catholic Society in a compound inside Haiti. 20th January 2010, the South African team makes world history. In the Catholic Church that collapsed, the air sounds in the rubble. And a few hours later, they pull out alive 64-year-old Enazizi. The moment she comes out, no oxygen, no food, no medicine, fractured hip, she comes out. And the first word she says, I love God Almighty. You inspired hope in somebody several thousand kilometers away. And the second thing she said, I love you. The South African team made world history because never before in the history of this continent has anybody been taken alive out of the rubble in the earthquake outside the continent. The medical team comes behind, and they come to the front. The northern country guys are there again. We can't do this. No CT scan, no X-ray, no ICU, no other machines. So we said, it's an earthquake. What do you expect? Everything is destroyed. The South African team steps forward. Johnny De Beer is the orthopedic surgeon. And we said, we need a drill, an orthopedic drill. And somebody comes with a Black & Decker. Johnny says, no problem. The team says, no problem. The Boermakker plan. And the guys start working, and they start saving lives. To the credit of the northern country teams, they come and say that if you want help, if you want healing, if you want to love, then go to the dream team. And the dream team is from South Africa. Take your education very seriously. Take your commitment very seriously. Be passionate about what you do. Thank you very much.
Difficult to follow, difficult to follow. So when I became head boy last year in my opening address to the school, I recited lines from a poem by William Wordsworth called Afterthought. And the poem goes as follows. The form remains, the function never dies, while we, the brave, the mighty, and the wise, we one and all are who in our morn of youth defied, the elements must vanish, be it so. Enough if something from our hands have power to live and act and to serve the future hour. And if toward the silent tomb we go, through love, through hope and faith's transcendent dower, we feel that we are greater than we know. I think that after listening to Dr. Suleiman's speech today, we can all agree that he has lived, acted, and served not only the future hour, but every hour that has come. I've been at the school for 13 years now, and I remember lots of guest speakers on Founders Day, but I can truthfully say that I remember no message that has touched me so deeply. Sir, your messages of reflection at the start is so important, particularly after the two difficult years that we've had without being able to gather on the field like this, Founders Day. The message and premise of spirituality moved and touched everyone's souls, and I know that for a fact. Your sense of humor, of course, brightened up everybody's day. And your ideas of harmony and unity have set a goal for the Matrix. So I ask the Matrix, let us set forth into the world and strive to spread that unity and harmony in all the ways that we can. I then just want to invite our guests to scan the QR code in the program to find out more about the gift of the givers, the inspiring work that they do, and the ways to contribute to the many ways in which they make a difference, bringing hope and restoring dignity to the most vulnerable. I'd like to end with the words of Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman today. Anyone who preaches love, kindness, compassion, and mercy is a man of God. So let us preach those things and let us keep on giving. I would like to now call on Dr. Suleiman to come and accept a token of our appreciation. We thank you so much. Let's give him another warm Saints round of applause.